before the time of Christ, and 700 years before he prophesied that God's great light was going to shine on those who dwelt in the land of deep darkness, the Apostle Matthew echoed the words of Isaiah's prophecy. Following his temptation in the wilderness and on the heels of his cousin John being imprisoned, Matthew tells us that Jesus withdrew to Galilee. And he goes on to say that this was in order to fulfill the word that Kevin just read that was 700 years earlier, that by the sea in the land of Zebulun, upon those who were sitting in the land of shadow and death, the light has dawned. The incarnation of the Christ is shrouded in intrigue and irony, if you ask me. And it's worth noting that Christ came not into an aristocratic family, but into a poor one. Think about that. The Prince of Heaven came not as a prince or a king, not as royalty, but as a pauper. The Lord of Lords came not as one of the ruling class, but as one of the underclass. Pursued from before the time he was born, and born into a seemingly hopeless and helpless situation, to an unwed teenage mother, into a family on the run from authorities. Just try to imagine if you can. Born into a society that was under the rule of a foreign invader with local authorities trying to kill you. This is the circumstance into which God's own son came into this world. And I treasure both the celebration that it is and the sobriety that it evokes in us and that this season of remembrance offers to us. It's melancholy, but it's hopeful. It's mundane, but it's miraculous. And the beauty and the irony of this divine coinciding is reflected in some of the songs that we sing, things like the hopes and fears, right? The contrast there, hopes and fears are met in thee tonight, or songs of shepherds rejoicing but also quaking at the sight. It's both of these things. The Messiah would one day ransom captive Israel. You don't have a ransom if there's not first a captive that's had. So we see in the story of Christmas and in the life of Christ and probably in our own lives cause for both celebration and reflection, as there's both suffering and glory to be experienced. This is the story of Christmas. It's triumphant, certainly, but it's triumphant against all odds and against all kinds of circumstances. In fact, in spite of circumstances. This has been a theme of ours here at this church, and especially in the last couple of years. Our worship of the Lord will be very much in spite of our circumstances. Our gratitude to God for who he is and what he's done comes many times in spite of what's happening or in spite of what's not happening, what we think ought to be different in the world or in our lives. And then along comes a Hebrew infant birthed not in a home or a hospital or even an inn, but in a barn of sorts, born to parents fleeing a tyrannical despot for their very lives. A Hebrew infant, quite in spite of the circumstances surrounding his life, he brings light into darkness and offers hope for humanity. And here's the thing about light. If there's no light, you can't see. You can't see a thing if there's no light. How can you find your way or even be aware of the reality around you if you can't see? And you can't see if there's no light. And if you don't believe it, just try driving home tonight without the headlights on your car, right? Just turn them off and tell me how well you can see, or if you'd be afraid of the danger and the unknown when your lights are not on. I was in Pennsylvania a couple of weeks ago with my wife, and I thought I knew exactly where I was. I lived there for 12 years, and I'm coming in the waning hours of daylight, and I'm like, is this it? Is this where we're supposed to go? I couldn't tell because there just simply wasn't enough light out. We have street lights over here in suburbia, right? Well, over there in Pennsylvania, good luck turning your headlights off over there. You'll never see your way, and you won't know what's coming up around the bend. I can promise you if there's no light. Because without light, the world is a dark place. Isaiah refers to the world as being the land of deep darkness. Matthew refers to it as the land of shadow and death. And in the darkness, people can't find their way or be aware of the realities around them unless there's light, unless the light himself has shone on us. Now, the world might have you believe that they already have the light. They might try to convince you that somehow within humanity or culture or human achievement or technology, they have all the light they need. Our culture will tell us in vain that we can find the light in any number of places like science or technology, or it's in youth or beauty or in wisdom or pleasure or in the perceived collective aptitude or the power of mankind. As a matter of fact, that's precisely what you'll witness in our culture this time of year, right? The latest technology, the latest phone, the latest cars, the latest gadgets, right? From electronics to computers to automobiles, they'll try to sell you beauty secrets or methods that are just sure to brighten up your life. They'll point to the accomplishments of mankind or the strength of the human spirit. They'll sell the lie that light is found within mankind himself or within the devices that he can conjure. If you'll just buy this or just buy that, you'll have a brighter future. All the while, careening down a dark, winding road with no light to guide them in the land of shadow and death. No, the world is a dark place, and light must come from beyond this world. And that's the message of hope ushered in by a Hebrew lad born into a poor family with humble circumstances. Despite the fact that the darkness veiled his lovely face, as the song says, despite the fact the darkness didn't comprehend him or apprehend him or understand him, nonetheless, he shone brightly on them. And the Father knew that some would see and that some would perceive and that some would embrace the light that is his Son, and hopefully some of us or all of us are embracing that, but the reality is that not all will. It makes me wonder, I've asked this question before and I don't know the answer to it. It makes me wonder a little bit, did God ever experience hope? God being all-knowing, what reason would he ever have to hope? He understands, the scripture says, the end from the beginning. He already knows the outcome, but it's the 8th chapter of Romans that makes me grapple with this notion. It says in verse 19, "For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God." Paul says that creation was subjected to futility because of him who subjected it in hope. I don't know if God has ever experienced such a thing as hope, because he knows the end from the beginning, but he's surely the one who subjected this world in hope. Hope for us, that we would one day be set free, Paul says. And there's that irony again. Subjection on one hand, but hope on the other. The world was subjected in futility. That word futility means devoid of truth. The whole of creation is lacking in truth because of its fallen state, because all of us went in our own direction, the Bible says, instead of going in the Father's direction. And our direction leads to futility in the land of shadow and death, or as Paul says, to corruption, yet not without hope. And he goes on to say that we ourselves also eagerly await for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. For in hope, there's the word again, in hope we have been saved. But hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not yet see, then with perseverance we wait eagerly. We eagerly wait for it. Christmas time is nothing if not a time to look back. It's a season of and for reflection. And as believers who are looking back, we're grateful that Jesus, the light of the world, pierced through the darkness for all of us so that we could all see, though not all do. But as believers, we experience this season of reflection. However, we're not only looking back. We are supposed to be looking forward. For that is what it means to hope, isn't it? To look forward to something. We're thankful that Christ came, but as believers, we eagerly await his return. Eagerly await, looking forward to, hoping for the day that he'll make good on his guarantee of adoption. And sometimes we grow weary in the waiting, don't we? In the subjection to this dark world, because we don't see everything we want to see down here. Paul says, of course you don't see it. If you could see the fulfillment of everything you're going to one day see, then it wouldn't be hope at all. So he says to the Romans, and I say to you, persevere, wait for it. Looking back, reflecting on the beauty and the irony of the incarnation of the Christ, reflecting on the miraculous conception, and not just the conception and the birth, but the death and the burial and the resurrection, we're inspired to persevere with hope towards the expectation of his return. Is that you tonight? Do you hope in his soon return? I pray that you do. Because you and I are going to be subjected to the futility of this dark world, whether we have hope or not. And wouldn't you rather, if you're already going to be subjected to the craziness of this world, wouldn't you rather endure that craziness with an abiding hope than just with darkness and hopelessness all by themselves? Utilitarian darkness and despair are all that this land of shadow can offer. That's what this fallen world is, apart from the light, but it doesn't have to be apart from the light. Because Jesus Christ, the light, has come. And Jesus, the light, is returning. And in the meantime, maybe Eric, if you could help me with one of those candles. He tells us that we are now the light of the world. And that's what he said to his disciples in Matthew 5. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. I just need one of those candles, Eric, if you could. Bob, you got it? Thank you, sir. And as believers, on whom the light has shone, this center candle is called the Christ candle. We light it on Christmas Eve. And then our call is to share that light with others. And I'm going to hand this to you. Thank you, sir. And to let others see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We can't give in to the discouragement and the futility of our culture or condition. Instead, we have to persevere with hope that the Father's given us, the hope that Christ has to offer us. That's your call and our mandate as believers, to offer this hope and this light in this season of hope during the Festival of Lights. As we make our way around, as a symbol of the reality that the light of Christ has indeed come to us, and as a symbol that we're committed to sharing that light of Christ with others, we're going to share these candles and close with this song as we look forward with perseverance and eager expectation as we shine our lights until Messiah's return.